Hello and welcome to the Label Sessions Presents podcast. Label Sessions is the world's leading innovation expert network. In this series, you will meet some of the most interesting leaders anywhere, from across the worlds of business, design, tech, culture, and sustainability, all signed to the Label Sessions roster. To find out more about our work, helping brands and institutions around the world take on their big challenges for the future, head to labelsessions.com to find out more. For now, enjoy the podcast.
Ken, thank you so much for taking time to sit down and talk to me today. We know you as someone who's a designer, an illustrator, and a maker from Aberdeen to the NBA, but I think you can put it in better words yourself. I'd love for you to introduce yourself and talk to us a little bit about your backstory and what gets you to this point.
Yeah, my name's Ken Clark. Professionally, I sometimes go by Rakitoma. It's a name that came around when I was developing a series of like arcade games for Tenants Lager. But then more recently, I still use it because Ken.com is owned by Mattel. I don't want to take those guys on. And also don't want to be confused with the ex-Tory MP, Ken Clark, also. I've worked with a bunch of people from the NBA, Royal Bank of Scotland, Coca-Cola, Standard Life, the BBC. In drinks industry, I've worked with Jura, the Dalmore, Innocent Gun, right through to charities like United to Prevent Suicide, CME, Chaz. So very varied work.
Yeah, and it's an incredible portfolio. I had a look at Rakitoma before, and that's a really great sort of point. I didn't know the story behind the name, so I'd love to hear a little bit more about that, because Tenants Lager is a Scottish sort of beer brand over here. But what's the story behind that in the arcades? Sounds fantastic.
Probably nine years ago, something like that, the Tenants wanted to make a suite of arcade games to basically tour around Scotland, a real machine, or a number of real machines. So they had them at in the park and in bars across Edinburgh, Glasgow, Aberdeen. They were sort of like 16-bit nods to drinking in Scotland. So it was like you had, you were a barman in Tea in the Park. So you were just seeing all those sort of colourful characters coming through and you were having to serve them Tenants related products. And then we had Chapdoor Run, which, depending on where you are in the country, it's called something else, Chappie or Ding Dong Dash, I've heard, if you go south enough. So it's just sort of classic Scottish pastime sort of rolled into a fun product.
Yeah, was Rakitoma one of the characters, or was it like one of the illustrations that you put together?
We sort of built the games under this fake label called Kenji Games, which then became my name. Kenji became Kenji Rakitoma, and then Rakitoma is the one that stuck. So I still use it sometimes, although it's very confusing for a lot of people. First time they get on a call with me, I think a lot of people expect me to be Japanese, and that is not the case. I'm half Spanish, but
that's great, because quite often a lot of these names come from just the fact that it sounds cool. There's often not a lot attached to it, so I really do like that. I really do appreciate that. That was from a little while ago, but what is it that's keeping you busy today? I know, you speaking of the NBA, you recently posted about working on that.
Work-wise, I'm not sure how much I can talk about certain things. Just finished a few months ago, did some work for the NBA, which was creating a sort of suite of videos to bring the NBA to Europe a bit more successfully. They kind of want to push it a bit more here. Number one in the draft last time round was a French player, so I think it's really boosted their interest in the sport. So I was just creating visuals for that and, doing a bit of animation work and dipping into other bits. So yeah, it was really interesting. Apart from that, got some other sort of graphic design work on at the moment. In my spare time, writing and illustrating kids' books, and so trying to find time to do that in the flurry of works, I think. But I've also just had a second second child. So it's a real juggling act.
Yeah, it sounds like there's a lot of spin in place right now. And I'd love to, I know you can't probably delve into it too much, but I'd love to know what is your, and also that, like, you know, with design, it obviously depends on what the client wants and you go sort of going for their style and a little bit but of shapeshifter in that regard. But what is the difference when it comes to your approach for, say, making or working on design work and illustration work for the NBA versus working for a more local brand like Tennis, or even working on your own illustration and your own outside of your professional work?
I guess being able to read and understand a brief in a short amount of time and being able to understand the industry that it sits in is very important. I think a lot of times people are very concerned about making stuff look cool or current. And I think first and foremost, our job is to read a brief and understand it in a way that no one else can or you know, no one else would.
The thing that I found interesting about that, again, sorry to bring up the NBA work, because I know it's brand new and sort of fresh on your mind. When I was looking at it, and I was really, really drawn to it because it's not what I expected to see for something out of a brand like the NBA, because it was very sort of, I don't want to say minimal, but it was very sort of colourful and I like the sort of paper mache aesthetic of it almost. And how did you come to that sort of conclusion of to do that? Was that just sort of a translation of them trying to cross over into Europe, like you were saying previously?
I think for that project, and for a lot of projects, I guess, I think it's often very interesting to look outside of the industry that you're working in to find inspiration. So, you know, looking at collage work might not naturally be the first port of call for a lot of people when they're working on something like sport, but it's often a great way of doing it, because otherwise you end up with a sort of sea of sameness, right? If everyone is looking within their own industry for inspiration, you just start seeing the same things come up again and again and again. So I think looking outside of, certainly into adjacent industries is an interesting way of approaching it.
But turning back into sort of the main question, sorry, I went on a bit of a tangent there. What is it that excites you right now in the field that you're in the world of design and illustration? And do you think are there any sort of opportunities that are coming in this field? Because often it's quite seen as, like you say, it's something that needs to be broken out of in a sense, because people often look for what's a trend to chase rather than what's original.
I think clients are willing to push the envelope a little bit more than maybe they were 10 years ago. I think everyone's kind of looking for this cut through in a world where stuff is looking very similar to each other. There's a lot of challenges that I think are going to come up in the industry. You know, I think AI is going to be a huge sort of question in visual sort of creative field. You know, at the moment in my line of work, it's a huge copyright issue, you know, so how that all shakes out will be very important. I think it's an exciting time, but I think it's also one that I think you need to watch closely and see how it all works out.
Yeah, 100%. And the crossover of AI and design work is something that really, really fascinates me, because often it's, like you say, it's something that's scraped from other people's designs and often stolen, because that's how they train these models. And what are your thoughts on, like, a good example was, have you seen, this is just one example, like, have you seen a movie called Late Night with the Devil, by any chance? It sort of brewed a bit of controversy because they have these interstitials where it was like, it's mimicking a 70s TV show, and they had, like, be right back kind of thing, like Eric Andre show style. And those stills that were on screen for, like, maybe 30 seconds were generated using AI. And I know that's seen as, like, a tool and accessory to that, but for design work, is there really an excuse to use it when, especially if you've got a budget, there's no reason to not just give that work to an actual real person?
For me, I think anything that's customer facing at the moment, you've got a kind of moral and you've got a moral stance to definitely not use anything AI generated if it's customer facing, because there's just it's not safe at the moment. There's too many questions around the legality of it. I think if you have the budget, and these places do generally, or they have done for a long time, they should definitely give it to someone that can create it from scratch.
I completely agree, because that's the thing, such a tool as this should be used to take away the things that we don't like to do rather than our creativity. So yeah, that's 100% on point. And thinking of the world of design that you're in, And outside of AI, because often, you know, AI is something that's talked about quite a bit, is what questions do you think leaders should be asking themselves right now when it comes to design? And is there any shifts that you think people will have to make when it comes to that?
I guess, how can you achieve real cut through, and how can you work? And that would be the main sort of question. And I think in order to do that, people have to worry less about being cool, following trends so closely. I think a lot of people are very concerned about what's in vogue at one particular moment, and they forget about the important things, which are, what are you trying to say and who are you trying to tell it to? I think when it comes to trends, it's an interesting one. I think it's, I get why people worry about them so much and follow them and try and forecast them. But the analogy I like to think of, I mean, I don't know if it's a good analogy. Analogies are meant to make things universally understood. I don't know if this does. But if you can imagine clay pigeon shooting, okay, stay with me. The clay pigeon is the trend, right? It's shooting out, it's fast, it's arcing all the time. If you try and aim for that trend, it's already gone by the time you pull the trigger. It's gone. It's no longer there. It's changed. It's completely different. You have to learn to lead your shot a little bit more. And I think this exact same applies in the design world. Is if you see something cool out there in the world, something impactful out there in the world, something inspiring, it's been in development for 6 months or a year by the time it gets there. So if you aim for that, you're already, you know, you're behind. It's already gone. So I think that's why it's interesting to look to adjacent fields and other industries and see what they're doing. Because I think that's where you start to be able to be a bit more innovative in the space that you work.
No, there's no need to bear with you at all. I think that was a really great analogy, actually, to think to look.
I mean, a lot of people will be like, I don't know what clay pigeon shooting is.
Oh, come on, surely. People are going to be under a rock to not know what clay pigeon shooting is, right? If not, people can Google it, you know. They'll listen to us on Spotify and Google it, and you know what's in the background. But I'd love to. That's a really great insight into how you sort of tick, and I'd love to know a little bit more about what makes you tick as a leader, because, and in terms of design, because obviously, you know, like I said before, your design approach changes depending on what the client wants, but everybody has their own sort of undercurrent. And I'd love to know a little bit about yours.
Clarity of vision is kind of the sort of key thing that makes me tick, I guess. If I think of all my favorite designers and illustrators, the common thread is how clear and concise what we create is. You know, look at, like, I don't know if you know Saul Bass, old film posters, or one of my favorite illustrators of all time is Maurice Sendak, who did Where the Wild Things Are. They're completely different, like complete polar opposites. You know, Saul Bass is very very simplistic, very clean, very, you know, often just two colors, and then Sendak's work's very detailed, very lots of line work, but the vision, the clarity of the vision's so clear start to finish of what they're trying to achieve, and I think that's what makes me tick in anything I see. If it looks consistent and clear across the board, I think that's the best. You know, if you look at, I don't know. Do you remember the Guinness advert, the surfers? When, like, that basically set up that brand for the next 25 years. You know, that is just a mood and a vision that is being carried through to everything they've done since. It's kind of perfect, right? One ad suddenly just was their tone of voice for the next 20 years. So I think, clarity of visions are very important.
Yeah, no, it was a really great mission statement, that sort of that Guinness ad. And now it's just the present day marketing is, can you split the G?
But it's just the times, right? Split the G is, I mean, I've been to Ireland, I've successfully and unsuccessfully split the G many times. But that's just them sort of pivoting to a more social media focused strategy, right? But the stuff they're still putting out ad wise is still tonally very similar to to that Surfers ad, you know, you think about the ad released in lockdown, which is all those sort of like, I can't remember what the soundtrack was. It was like Dreaming of You. I can't remember what the song was, but like the seeing the pints in various different scenarios, you know, like a black and white door or whatever. It's tonally very similar, I think, vision wise and mood wise to even the Surfers ad in the late '90s, early 2000s.
Fantastic, and I got to say as well before I move on, Maurice Sendak is a fantastic inspiration to have. I completely agree that he's one of the favorite sort of designers and illustrators. It's such a fantastic art style. It's up there with, in terms of like children's illustration, it's up there with Quentin Blake for me. I love that sort of watercolor aesthetic. It's just such a fantastic look and design.
Very hard to touch someone like that, I think, because it's of the time, especially, it was so unique, and even still. A lot of people wouldn't have the gall to put that many lines in their work. They just were so like all that cross hatching and stuff, very detailed and very like full of life. I'd be terrified to put that much stuff on a paper because I'd just be worried that eventually you reach a point where you go, taking it too far, start again. Even now there's incredible children's illustrators out there that are just doing some phenomenal stuff. You know, John Klassen, I think, is someone that everyone should look up if they haven't. He's a phenomenal illustrator.
Turning to a little bit more of reflexive mode right now, is there any sort of advice that you would give your younger self, especially when it comes to design work and starting your craft?
Don't worry about making mistakes. I think it's very easy, and because it's quite oftentimes a lonely profession. Because you're in your head and you're creating stuff and you're maybe not showing people because you're scared of showing people because stuff's not ready. Kind of don't worry too much about that kind of stuff. I think make mistakes. If you've got the time, don't be scared to go around the houses with ideas and chuck stuff and get rid of it. I know that turnaround times aren't always very forgiving of that, but I think if you have the time on a project, be willing to make more mistakes. I think I was always worried about getting it right first time. And I think it does happen, you know, like there's gut instinct is often right on certain projects. And the first thing you do is sometimes the right thing. But I think you can get carried away with bad ideas. And I think sometimes letting them go is a very healthy thing to do.
No, absolutely. It really is a healthy thing to do. Because like you say, it's obviously, you know, mistakes that are there to be made. And especially for creative work, it comes down to a lot of iteration. I feel like very few first passes ever make it through the door. It's always a case of back and forth, depending on who you're talking to.
You can't be too precious about anything you do in this line of work, because it'll kill you if you can't take that criticism and you can't take that feedback. Then you'll be in big trouble. You've got to have thick skin, because you're putting you're laying it out there. And I think it's quite hard for a lot of people to be like, oh, I don't like this, come try this. So I think years of experience, you start to understand that it's better when it's a collaborative thing. And yes, too many cooks can spoil the broth, but sometimes you need a sous chef or whatever.
Yeah. No, 100%. And because something like design, illustration, editing, video work, anything like that can be almost a personal extension of yourself, it can be very easy to take it personally rather than as a pure critique.
Yeah, 100%. I think that is definitely a big part.
We've talked about trends, we've talked a little bit about AI, obviously, because AI is on everybody's tongue. When you look around the industries that you work in, obviously you've worked with a lot of different sort of industries, be it from the drinks industry to sport to so many different things, and the wider world, where do you see the opportunities to really reinvent the way that design is done, the way that illustration is done?
Again, it's probably looking sideways at other industries. You know, I think if you work in fintech, it's okay to look at fashion when you're looking for inspiration. It often could reap some really interesting rewards, and I think looking that way is often more helpful than worrying too much about what people are doing in your own space. I think it's good to understand your own space, your own industry. But I think yeah, look at weirder places for inspiration, and what you'll find is interesting veins.
You've got me thinking about a fintech brand that's like got a fashion brand aesthetic now. I'm imagining that, and I think that'd be quite funny.
Yeah. Yeah, why not?
I think that'll look fantastic. I'm imagining a fintech brand that looked like Burberry.
Yeah, well, totally. Hey, let's
yeah, I know. Up. This might be the start of something. The start of something beautiful. But and speaking of friendships, actually, this is moving on to quickfire questions. How's the feeling that hopefully that they'll be able to? But could your friends explain what it is that you do?
I'm not actually sure that my wife could explain what I do. But I guess they would say something along the lines of he makes things look nice.
It's not the worst answer to that question I've heard. And what was it, if they could, what is it that you'd want them to say then?
Honestly, probably that make things look nice. No, I think that able to help people realise their visions in ways that that you wouldn't expect. That would be the hope, I think.
And you've given some really great advice the past sort of half an hour or so. What is the best advice that you yourself have been given?
I had an old tutor that always said, less is more. When you're trying to communicate something visually, start with it in its simplest form. And you can always add more to that. But it's a much better way of doing it than starting with something that takes ages, super complicated, and then having to strip everything out. Start with its basic form. Is it communicating what you want to do and who you want it to communicate to, and then build on that?
What is one thing that you could not live without?
Do you mean like beyond normal stuff like air and water?
other than the necessities, this could be a fun one.
Okay, like an actual... I think kids' books are great. I think that would be a great thing. I think if I was on a desert island, I'd almost prefer kids' books than regular books. I think they're the most joyous expression of creativity that you can get in a single tangible thing. And when you get a good one, you'll want to hold on to it for life. That or sushi. Love sushi.
I'll let you have two. And this is the last one. This is a question that we always ask everyone. On a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being the most, how weird are you, Ken?
Weird. 8? Would you give me an 8.5?
Oh, yeah, 8.5? Good decimals if you'd like.
I think 9s and 10s are reserved for people that put their socks on before their underpants, to be honest. So I can't put myself that.
And rightly so, to be fair. Honestly, I completely agree with you there. But that's a brilliant place to leave it. So thank you so much for your time, Ken. I really appreciate it. It's been a great sort of chat to you and learn a little bit more about you.
No problem. Nice to start the day.
As we close out another episode, make sure to like, subscribe, and follow us on our social channels. Want to access Label Sessions for your brand? Whether you want to build new products, access world-class mentors for your team, or reinvent the way you attract talent into your business, visit Label Sessions to find out more.